Good morning. You are tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear about a new campaign to encourage people to slow down while they're driving through neighbourhoods. After that, with more and more people working remotely, and with all students doing their classes online, access to high-speed internet has become yet another aspect of inequality in our society. Well, over the weekend, free internet hotspots were being handed out at no cost in North Boulder to allow people to have access to the internet during the pandemic. We'll get a report. After that, if you're a resident of Lewisville, you may or may not be aware that there is an election happening tomorrow. It is for the Lewisville Fire Protection District. We'll hear what the election is about from one of the candidates and how you can cast your vote. After headlines from the BBC and a commentary from Jim Hightower on a public affair this morning, Liz Lane takes a look at the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on the music industry in Colorado, with concerts and music festivals being cancelled. Her guest today is longtime Colorado music promoter Chuck Morris. He's starting a music business program at Colorado State University. Then at 9 o'clock, it is a media analysis from Counterspin, rounding out this morning's news and public affairs before we begin another morning of music on the Morning Send Alternative at 9:30. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here is Jamie Sittler.
Higher education officials in Colorado say they need another infusion of federal funding to weather the economic downturn due to the coronavirus. In a letter sent to the state's congressional delegation, 20 higher education leaders, including Mark Kennedy, the president of the Colorado University System, and Colorado Community College System President Joan Garcia, are requesting $47 billion in emergency support for higher education in the U.S. The Daily Camera reports that Congress approved $14 billion in March, and the state leaders say that was an essential first step. But now revenues to the state are expected to take a hit next year, meaning funds for higher education will be cut. Also, lower enrollment and the possibility of continued remote learning will result in less funds coming in. In the letter, the CU system is seeking permission for state governments to use federal relief funds to offset budget cuts. Currently, they can be spent only on new expenses related to the pandemic. The head of NAROPA, Chuck Leaf, said that his institution needs additional federal funding to offset the impact of the sudden switch to remote learning. In related news, the CU Boulder Staff Council is seeking layoff and furlough protections for both the staff and contract employees. The Daily Camera reports that the council passed a resolution last month asking campus leaders to extend the same protections that are given to the classified staff to others. The protections include advanced notice of layoffs, the creation of a plan to absorb a laid-off employee's job duties, and information about how a position was chosen to be laid off. John Kelly, a co-chair of the staff council, said that the time and time again they have seen the first suggestions were furloughs for some of the lowest paid employees, such as housing and dining, and those working at events and conferences. Kelly said that they did not want to see the entire budget shortfall be put on staff. However, university leaders have not committed to most of their requests. Heather Martin, also a council co-chair, said that she hopes high-earning administrators will consider taking more pay cuts or give up bonuses beyond the 10% cuts that they've already announced. Counties along the Front Range of Colorado received almost $560 million in direct federal aid last month. The Denver Post reports that now county officials must decide how to distribute the money for coronavirus aid and what to spend it on. The $500 million represents aid only to the five Colorado counties with at least 500,000 people or more that was received under the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, also known as the CARES Act. The other 59 counties in the state are out of luck for now. The funds received under the CARES Act do not include other monies, such as those from Housing and Urban Development, the Paycheck Protection Program, and loans from the federal government to businesses. One of the problems for cities and counties that have received the emergency appropriations is that the federal government has not told them exactly how to spend them. Jerry Titulio, treasurer of Jefferson County, said that the biggest problem is that the rules and regulations are constantly changing. Denver officials expect to receive final guidelines from the federal government in the next 2 weeks. Representative Joe Neguse, a Democrat of Lafayette, said that congressional Democrats are considering legislation to send as much as $1 trillion to states and local governments, including small towns. Yesterday, state officials said that Colorado's total number of deaths from the coronavirus rose to 842, but that does not include an additional fatality from Summit County. As of yesterday, 722 people from the disease were hospitalized in the state. Health officials warned that possible cases will begin to rise again as restrictions are relaxed. Outside of the Denver metro area, some businesses will be reopening on a limited basis. As Governor Jared Polis' safer at home phase kicks in, offices can reopen today, again, outside the metro area, with a 50% reduction in staff. Child care facilities can also reopen if they are following best practices. Businesses are still encouraged to allow employees to continue telecommuting. The relaxed measures do not apply to Denver, Adams, Arapahoe, Boulder, Broomfield, Gilpin, and Jefferson counties, where stay-at-home orders are in place until May 8th. More people in Colorado have died from COVID-19 in less than 2 months than have died from influenza in any of the recent flu seasons. The Denver Post reports that flu seasons are much longer, lasting almost two-thirds of the year, as opposed to the 2 months of the coronavirus. The number of fatalities from COVID-19 is currently the equivalent of 14 per day, 4 to 5 times higher than the average daily deaths in any of the last 4 flu seasons. More than twice as many people are hospitalized on average per day for COVID-19 than were with the flu. Glenn Mays of the Colorado School of Public Health said that while it is difficult to compare data directly, it's clear the new virus is more contagious and more deadly than seasonal flu. In today's weather, we'll see a slight chance of thunderstorms for about another hour, and the same possibility after 3 p.m., with a high today of about 68. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high near 70. Right now, it's about 50 along the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It is 11 minutes past 8 o'clock. If you haven't heard the phrase 20 is plenty in regard to improving the safety of Boulder's neighbourhood streets, well, you're about to. KGNU's Ros Brown says Boulder City Council is scheduled to vote this month on whether to lower the speed limit in residential neighbourhoods, joining the nationwide movement called 20 is plenty.
What it's about is adjusting the default speed limit in Boulder.
That's Mark McIntyre, a member of Boulder's Transportation Advisory Board. Right now, the city's default speed limit is 25 miles per hour, but momentum has been building to lower it to 20, joining the 20 is plenty movement in cities such as Boston, Portland, and Seattle, where it's already been adopted.
The practical effect of that is residential streets that are currently 25 miles per hour or are unsigned, the speed limit will now be 20 miles per hour.
All drivers know 20 or 25 miles per hour can feel pretty slow when you're behind the wheel of a 2,000-pound vehicle. But McIntyre says 20 rather than 25 miles per hour can be the difference between life and death.
The data shows that the severity of injury to a pedestrian or cyclist being hit by a car at 20 miles per hour is dramatically less than 25. And we all know that people speed. And so by default, if you tend to travel at, let's say, 2 or 3 miles per hour over the posted speed limit, traveling at 22 miles per hour versus 28, again, a dramatic reduction in the degree of injury or death should a car hit a pedestrian, cyclist, anyone not in a car.
Sue Prant is the executive director of Boulder's Community Cycles and has led the push for 20 is plenty. She says it's one aspect of Boulder's Vision Zero goal, the goal to reduce the number of traffic-related fatalities and serious injuries to zero.
It's a worldwide movement. It's part of Vision Zero, which is the kind of larger overarching worldwide movement. It's never been put into place and then removed, which leads me to believe that it's popular and not an undue burden.
As part of Boulder's three-year-old neighborhood speed mitigation program, Prince says the city receives far more applications than it can fund each year from neighborhoods that want traffic mitigation measures, such as speed bumps or roads re-engineered.
On neighborhood streets, you have to remember these are places where children play, where pets roam, where people often, and rightfully so, can treat the street in front of their house as an extension of their front yard. So that's why it's gotten such huge support. We have 73 neighborhoods who have applied for speed mitigation within only 3 years of a program. And, you know, we all own that street in front of our houses. It belongs to the community. It shouldn't belong to speeding motorists who make us fear to use it.
The 20 is Funny ordinance is one of the rare times Boulder City Council hasn't demanded a study to see if it's a good fit for Boulder. While city staff thought a technical report at the cost of more than $100,000 should come first, City Council decided to go ahead and began changing the speed limit signage across the city at a cost of $65,000 this year. McIntyre adds that in cities that have adopted 20 is Plenty, there's often an overall speed reduction by automobiles on the streets. Good news for Boulder, which has championed the use of alternative transportation for decades.
So it's a measure to both improve safety, it's a measure to calm our streets, make them quieter, calmer, safer, and more welcoming to children, to the elderly, people with disabilities. The idea is to make our residential streets safer and more welcoming to all modes.
Boulder City Council is scheduled to vote on adopting 20 is Plenty at a regularly scheduled meeting in May. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
With more and more business and all education happening online these days, if you do not have access to high-speed internet, you are on the wrong side of the digital divide. In fact, access to high-speed internet has become yet another aspect of inequality in our society. Well, over this past weekend, free internet hotspots were being handed out at the North Corner Boulder Library. They were being given out to the general public without having to provide any proof of documentation, just a name and an email for which the organisers could send a survey. As I said, the hotspots were being given out at no cost, and it's in recognition of the need for families, and particularly families with children, to have access to the internet. KGNU's Rosanna Longo went along and spoke to some of the people who were there.
As Rob Palmer, and here to get hotspot.
Why do you need this service today, sir?
Oh, because it helps me with my school, and I don't really have good Wi-Fi at home.
Which school do you go to, may I ask?
KC Middle School.
How you learn about this free service, this free internet service for you and your family?
It was my aunt that she told me about it.
So you are here to get the free Wi-Fi for you and your family. Your experience as a young student, have you had internet at home before?
Oh, yeah, but it was not very good.
Okay, so I'm going to need you to put your name and then your email address, and then we'll hand you one. So 166 is yours. Okay. Entonces esto solo va a funcionar hasta julio 22 y luego lo regresan a la librería. Creo que va a ser en la librería de Arapaho, la grande.
This is made possible by the Boulder Public Library Foundation. They purchased all of these hotspots for us to lend for 3 months to residents who are having trouble accessing the internet and who have, for whatever reason. So they are making it possible for us to lend this out with unlimited data for 3 months. So all we are asking are a name and an email address so we can email out a survey at the end of this. And then we're asking them to return the hotspots in July. July 22nd is when the SIM cards, that's what they're paid through right now with the generosity of the Library Foundation. And so, yeah, we're out here in front of North Boulder Library, Corner Library, just making it available for people to walk up and tell us if they need a hotspot. And I'm going to give you all, we have a tote bag here. We have a couple things from the library in here. We also have a flyer about our Summer of Discovery summer program. It hasn't started yet, but it has the website where there will be more information coming in June about our summer reading program.
Si tiene problemas con el hotspot, aquí tenemos un información para quien llamar si necesita ayuda.
Okay. Muchas gracias. Que tengan buen día.
Buen día.
Have a great afternoon.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity.
My name is Anne Ledford, L-E-D-F-O-R-D. I'm the Youth Services Manager at Boulder Public Library. And this is something that our foundation, the Boulder Public Library Foundation, was so generous to jump and offer to purchase these hotspots for us to make available to the community. It is led by Amy Shum. She is, I'm going to get her title wrong, so I'm not going to even get it wrong on tape right now. But I can connect you with her after this. I can give you her email address. But essentially the idea is that we know that we provide a great service when our doors are open by providing access to computers. And when we shut our doors, we no longer are providing this access to the internet anymore. And so how can we still provide that service when we are closed? And so the Boulder Public Library Foundation has done something so generous as buying, it's over 100 hotspots that they have purchased. I don't know the exact number, that we are allowed to lend for 3 months with unlimited data. It's through T-Mobile service, and it has to be a Boulder City resident. And there is no income qualifications right now, but with this program is with in mind of families and individuals who cannot maybe afford an internet bill, or their bandwidth is so high at their household because they have so many people in their households working from home and also going to school from home, doing distance learning, that just one router can't take all of that bandwidth, and so a Wi-Fi hotspot on top of that will help. So this is what this program had in mind. It was those kind of individuals and families. It's just starting. I know the flyers that have been seen around town had two dates of giveaways that we were handing these out. We are going to continue to do this. At this recording, it is May 2nd on a Saturday, and we didn't really readily advertise this out. We're still kind of figuring out how to market this and choosing what days and what locations. So, we're definitely still working through the details on that, but this program is not going away, and it will probably have more hotspots with the generosity more of this program. And I'm so excited that to work for the City of Boulder and with the Boulder Public Library Foundation to be able to provide this service, because it saddened me greatly when we closed our doors and that service went away, and to know that there is still a digital divide out there, that there's a lot of people who cannot access a lot of the resources that even our website and our e-library and all these great things we have to offer, but people cannot get online. So that's the idea. And we try to do shifts with one English-speaking staff member and another Spanish-speaking member. And we are so graciously lucky today to have our Spanish-speaking volunteer here today. And I will let you take over.
Just your experience about providing this service, supporting the initiative, and maybe, what you have seen, mm-hmm. and how in a way, by seeing you and by you using Spanish, you make it easy for us, mm-hmm. for the Latino community, for the Latino family, for this young one that just stepped in and put his email, yes. and was happy to just take with him the hotspot today.
My name is Anareli Morales. And I am a bilingual volunteer today at the North Boulder Corner Library, helping pass out or loan these hotspots. And I've seen a lot of people come by and ask, like, what this is. And a lot of people really miss the library and coming to access all the resources we have here. But not everyone has digital access through the internet. I'm also suffering with that, and so it's really nice to know that there's someone providing free resources to our community, and especially in Boulder. I think people forget that not everyone in Boulder can afford the internet, and it should be a right, but we don't have that, and it's just not accessible to everyone. Or it's harder to use now when you have everyone in your house all at the same time trying to be entertained or learn or communicate with friends through the internet, and you just don't have bandwidth. And certain regions in Boulder, you just can't even afford to have higher speed. I would love to have higher speed internet, but I just can't. There is a maximum. So It depends on where you live within Boulder, how fast your speeds are. So this is a wonderful service that the library will continue to do as long as they have the hotspots available. So I really hope people take advantage of it. And I hope that our Latino community can get through this together and find the resources they need to just thrive, I hope, in this situation.
That was a report from over the weekend at the North Corner Boulder Library, where free hotspots were being given out to the general public. Thanks to KGNU's Rosanna Longo for that report. Well, tomorrow is Giving Tuesday now. It's a new global day of giving and unity, and it's going to take place on May 5th. And this is in addition to the regularly scheduled December 1st Giving Tuesday. But this is an emergency response to the unprecedented need that's caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. And we're hoping that you will support local organizations that are really stepping in to provide service even more during these times. But of course, so many local nonprofits are hurting during these times as well. Well, today and tomorrow, we're going to be hearing from some of those nonprofits. And of course, KGNU partners with so many nonprofits through our .org segment that you can hear Monday and Thursday afternoons at 2:55. Well, this morning, we'll hear from the Emergency Family Assistance Association in Boulder. And here is Lenora Cooper with EFA.
Well, specifically in terms of how EFA operates, we receive no federal funding at all. We're very supported by the city and by the county. And our whole philosophy is neighbors helping neighbors. So we are inspired and thrilled, and the need is unprecedented. Last week alone, EFA distributed over $72,000 in direct financial need for in terms of rental assistance, utilities, medical bills, things of that like. And we've seen a tremendous increase in the need for our services. And so without the support of individuals and companies in Boulder, we would not be able to meet this need, and even more strains would be put on the systems because more and more people would be unhoused because they aren't able to make their rent. And as this continues, we only see the demand for our services increasing. So we are so incredibly grateful, and please, please, please keep it coming. We need donations for our food bank, for direct financial need, and we're so grateful. Boulder's a tremendous, tremendous community. And it's all about us helping each other.
That's Lenora Cooper with the Emergency Family Assistance Association, just one of the many local nonprofits participating in Giving Tuesday now. Now, KGNU is also participating in that. So as you find out more about Giving Tuesday now, please also do consider supporting your community radio station. We'll hear from another local nonprofit on our .org segment. That's this afternoon, just after Metro at 3:25. And of course, tomorrow morning as well on Giving Tuesday, we'll hear from another nonprofit participating in Giving Tuesday now. Well, the Louisville Fire Protection District is a special tax district that's not part of the city of Louisville, and they manage about $4.5 million annually to provide fire and emergency services to the city of Louisville. Well, tomorrow they're having an election, and it's to elect two of the five members of the board who administer the district. The five members can be anyone who lives in or owns property within the fire protection district. Well, one of the candidates is John Malansky, who is trying to get the word out about this election that many people in Louisville are not aware of.
So there's only one polling place, and again, that's the Station 2 here in Louisville. Their plans, when I talked to the person who is administering it, I believe they call it the polling judge. Her name is Jackie Fry. She's the administrator at Louisville Fire Protection District. Jackie told me that their plans are to have people stay in their cars outside the fire station, and they will be brought in one by one. They will provide gloves to folks that request them, and they will sanitize the space after every individual person votes. And once the individual has left the lobby where they're conducting voting, then they'll invite the next person in.
Why is it that you want to serve as part of the Lewisville Fire Protection District? Like, what are some of the duties that would come about as a result of this?
Mm-hmm. So the five-member board, they primarily look after the budget of the district. They handle contracts. They hire the fire chief. They essentially administer the funds for the district so that the district can do its job. There are four people running for two slots that are open at the moment. And myself, I've lived in Lewisville for 19 years. I was a volunteer firefighter at Lewisville for 13 of those years. And I retired a couple of years ago, and I decided that I wanted to use my experience in another way to continue serving my community. I don't have any political ambitions. There's certainly no prestige and very little pay in a job such as this. I just think that I could make a difference, and I could help my community. I care about this community.
You actually have a background in this particular area. Give us a sense of, you know, your experience for this.
Sure. So my experience is threefold. As I said, I was a volunteer firefighter at Lewisville for 13 years. So Lewisville traditionally was a volunteer program. As a matter of fact, the chief was a volunteer until roughly 2003. And the department has slowly changed over into a mostly professional organization, although there is still a volunteer program. So I know quite a lot about the operations of the fire department, as well as relationships with other emergency service organizations that are nearby, as well as in the county. So I think that helps me an awful lot. I understand their issues. Also, as I said, I've been a resident of Lewisville for a long time, and not all of the candidates are actually residents of the city of Lewisville. One of them in particular owns property here, but he doesn't know what it's like to live in town, to see the emergency services go by your house several times a day, and to understand the issues that people want addressed. Also, I've worked in business for 25, almost 30 years, doing new product development, so I understand how to run projects, you know, how to handle finances, and how to nurture relationships in order to get things done.
That's John Milansky, who is a candidate in the election that is happening tomorrow for the Lewisville Fire Protection District. There are two positions open, and you vote in person at Fire Station 2. That's at 895 Via Appia Way, which is across from the Lewisville Recreation Centre. And as we heard, there will be social distancing measures in place. And you can find out more about John Milansky's campaign. That's at johnforfire.com. And that election happening tomorrow, voting in person, Tuesday, May 5th, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. at the Lewisville Fire Station 2, just opposite the Lewisville Recreation Centre. Now, John Milansky says that if he were to be elected to the Fire Protection District Board, one of the things that he would also do would be make sure more people actually know about the election. So it is happening tomorrow.